Tango Tango Papa 1927, October 20th, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Cloverdale, Indiana. So I recorded a podcast the other night when I was in the motel room waiting on my truck to get worked on. Well, as it turns out, I ended up spending a second night in the motel. They weren't able to finish the job until, I think it was sometime in the afternoon. I've got my days. Got to remember, what is today? Today is Tuesday, is that correct? Yes. So they finished working on it early in the afternoon yesterday, which was Monday. I don't know. It was kind of weird. I couldn't, earlier I wasn't able to get the fuel-fired heater, and that was what the problem was. Wasn't able to get it to come on at all, or at least I didn't think it was. But it was kind of strange, because when they actually started working on it, Sunday afternoon is when they started working on it. When the guy come out to get the truck, I turned it on, and I'll be darned if it didn't come on. But they went ahead and looked at it anyway, and as it turns out, it would come on, but there was no heat. It wasn't putting out any heat. So they, of course, had to take it apart and clean it up and do whatever they do with them, and then they put it back together, and it seemed to work okay last night. So at first after I'd picked the load up, I picked it up at Palmyra, Pennsylvania, and the load delivers to Edwardsville, Illinois, outside of St. Louis. And so last night, after I picked the load up at, and I'd parked for the night, the thing wouldn't come on immediately. And I thought, oh no, here we go again. But it came on, and I don't know why it didn't come on when I first turned it on, but it may have been because the temperature sensor might have been too warm inside here, and so it didn't cause it to kick in. I don't know. I'll find out this evening. Now, I don't have it turned on right now, but I'm not sure what the temperature is here at Cloverdale, Indiana. When I stopped earlier over on the other side of the eastern part of Indiana, of course, Indiana is kind of a narrow state, was over on the other side of Indianapolis. It was 65 degrees there, according to the truck thermometer. So I think right here it says it's 59 degrees, if that's correct. So that's not quite cold enough yet. But so I'll turn it on tonight and see what happens. I don't know what the overnight low is supposed to be. Let me see if that shows that. 45, yeah, that's cool enough. So I'll be turning it on, and so hopefully, I think it's probably going to work okay now. Let's hope so, anyway. That's enough of that kind of a problem. And I think in the newer trucks, it sounds like they have had so much trouble with these fuel-fired heaters, they may be, with the new stuff they're buying, they may be getting away from this again. I'm not sure. It just depends. They tend to buy, I think this is true of all trucking companies, when they buy a batch of new trucks, they tend to not always get the same thing. They'll get let's say they get a bunch of Freightliners in, and the Freightliners will be spec'd for a certain way, and then they'll get the Internationals in, and of course that's what I have, and they'll be spec'd a certain way, and then whenever it becomes time to get new Freightliners, then those will be spec'd in a different way, et cetera, et cetera. So that seems to be the way that trucking companies buy new equipment. They never always seem to get the same thing, and they're always ending up kind of specking things in different ways. Now, if you go back into the 80s, into the 1980s, let's say you had a trucking company that would buy a bunch of Freightliners, for example, and they would all kind of follow each other off of the assembly line. There was a lot of inconsistency because from one truck to the next, you would have some differences. Even though theoretically there shouldn't have been differences between, let's say you had one truck follow the other one right off the assembly line, you wouldn't think that there would be any differences, but in fact there would be little differences. And there would be, when you would go to drive them, they would actually even newer trucks could actually have kind of a different feel to them. But in, of course, I don't know, probably starting sometime in the 90s, that changed, and then they began to, the manufacturers began to have a much more consistent manufacturing process. And so that's true to this day. They do have a much more consistent process. Now, of course, they do make changes. They're making, as all manufacturers do, on especially with production line things, they do, as let's say they come out with a new model, well, then they sort of slipstream in changes, and that's why it's better really to not go for something that's a brand new model and sort of wait until it's been around for a while, and it's been, whatever the model is, has been in production for a while, and you're much more likely to end up with, in this case it would be a vehicle, but it could be anything that's manufactured on a production line anywhere, but you're more likely, if you buy something that's already been being manufactured for a while, you're more likely to end up with a product that is not as prone to problems, because then they figure out where things are going wrong, and they make little tweaks here and there, and you end up with a better, more reliable overall product, at least theoretically. So, anyway, I've got another, some more Voxer files, actually two more Voxer files from Joel, and he's talking, I've listened to a little bit of it, and he's talking about, this time is still in regard to Windows, but and Apple, actually, but he's talking about the idea of a phone being able to run, let's say, Windows software. And the Apple people, it's interesting, the Apple people, in order to kind of discount what Microsoft has accomplished with the Microsoft, with this Surface, with the Surface Pro 3 and now the Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book, in order to try to counter that, I hear them saying, and they kind of repeat it, because, and of course I'm listening sort of to the podcast echo chamber, where they all sort of repeat the same, they end up repeating the same things over and over to each other. But the line is that, Well, Microsoft has already tried this one interface to rule them all, and it's a failure. And so that has nothing to do with the success of the Surface Book or the Surface Pro 3 or the Surface Pro and now the Surface Pro 4. I don't really care so much about Windows Phone. Now, if the Continuum idea is interesting, I think it's kind of a fascinating idea. It would be better, and Joel talks about this a little bit, it would be better if it was running on an x86 type of processor in the phone, and those do exist, as Joel talks about. Those do exist, and that would be interesting, and then you could... it could be useful to run software on that, but then you begin to run into a little bit of a problem. Let's say you do have a monitor and keyboard that you can plug your phone into. Well, you do run into the problem that the phone's processor, even as powerful as the processors are in today's smartphones, you're not going to get the same kind of performance out of them that you will with a more of a laptop type processor or more of a desktop type processor. And so now that's always subject to change because it seems like the power of these processors is always increasing. So it would be, I don't know what kind of an experience it would be if you actually, let's say I'm recording this on the Surface Pro 3, and it's a real computer with you know, plenty of flash storage and a beefy, kind of a fairly beefy processor, and especially relative to the computers I've had in the past, and then plus a 256 gigabyte flash drive. Put all that together, and but it's, you know, this is a 12-inch diagonal tablet, basically, that is running a desktop operating system, and it works because the miniaturization has gotten to the point where you can pack a real computer, a real PC, into a tablet form factor with a capacitive touchscreen. It will attach to a keyboard that has a built-in trackpad, and you've got yourself a desktop computer. But to shrink that down into a phone form factor, then what happens if you try to multitask, if you try to run, even if it's an x86 processor, what happens if you try to run, if you try to load full type Windows software like I'm running on this 12-inch tablet? Let's say I had this 10-year-old version of Adobe Edition that I was able to put on my x86 Windows phone. What kind of an experience would I get? Would it scale? It probably wouldn't scale very well to the phone screen. And unless, of course, it could, and then, you know, you just have a sort of a miniature interface, because, you know, the phones nowadays have fairly high resolution. So, don't know how that would work, but then then I would need a keyboard and a large monitor if I wanted the actual experience. So, there are certain instances, I think, where that kind of thing could work if someone was really trying to travel light, and they had access to a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor, and then they could just hook up their phone with the adapter, and you could have Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel or PowerPoint or larger programs like that where you could do some actual real-world productivity stuff. But it's running this on a tablet makes a whole lot more sense, and that's really where I'm more interested in this. I thought it was it's kind of fascinating, the demonstration that they did, Microsoft did, with the Continuum. I thought that was kind of fascinating. And could they add that? Let's say, could Microsoft make a Microsoft Continuum for Android where you'd plug it in and you'd get a kind of a Windows 10 type experience? Don't know. So I could see where that something like that would could possibly be useful in the right situation. But what I'm more really happy with, and I think the most of the Surface Pro, starting with the Surface Pro 3 users, and now the Surface Book, I think the people that are really happy, particularly the Surface Pro 3 and Surface Pro 4, is that you've got a tablet form factor, a 12-inch tablet that is actually a real computer that's capable of running real software, and you can do real productivity on it, and yet it can be a tablet, and you can do app-type things on it. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play Joel's comment here. But the difference between, you have full software, and then you have the app experience. And there, as I said before, there's a place for both. The app experience is great, particularly on a smaller screen. But the app experience can be great for just getting at little bits and bobs of websites or web services. For example, just now before I started recording, I was looking at my phone and I quickly fired up the app for my bank, for the online banking app that I have. And I put in my username and my password, and there's my account, and I tap on it. I think I looked at it this morning, and I just kind of like to look at it. Sometimes a couple of times a day, just to make sure everything's fine, you know, because I've been doing that for a long time now, and you know, of course, if you've been listening for a while, you know that, I guess it's been a number of months ago I did that, and I quickly discovered that I had some bogus charges that were on my account that I didn't make, and so I was able to quickly call my bank and have the debit card have my debit card canceled, and was able to quickly resolve that. But the app works much faster. It's very quick. But it's just a kind of a single-purpose thing just for the bank. And it's actually faster than logging in on a website and then kind of clicking through the web interface. So apps have a place. They really do have a place, and they work good on smaller screens with slower processors. But at the same time, if you've got a faster processor and a somewhat larger screen, like a 12-inch like a 12-inch tablet, then you can also run real software on it and have a mouse and a good-sized keyboard and USB port, and I've got a complete computer here that can do real computer stuff. But that's the point that the Apple people are deliberately missing, is that it's not one interface to rule them all. It's more about, at least with the Surface Pro 3 and the Surface Pro 4, and probably the Microsoft, the Surface Book, it's more about what can you do with the tablet form factor. And if the tablet form factor is large enough and it's got a good enough processor, and enough memory and enough storage space, then you can do real computer stuff. But in a form factor that is capable of also running apps, and that is really a tablet. So it's still actually a tablet. So anyway, let me go ahead and play Joel's comment. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Not to beat a dead horse, but I'm listening to your show on the... I haven't even got to the point where you're playing my recording yet about the Surface Book and your Surface Pro 3 for
that you got. And here's something that I was thinking about. You're talking about the one interface to rule them all, which I think they'll have it. In fact, I actually think they really do have it with Windows 10, mostly because of the fact they have the Continuum, which that's, you know, if you bought a Windows phone, you plug that into your into the Continuum and basically have a Windows desktop. The only thing that is not clear here is when will they bring out a phone based on x86? There are some that are. The new Nokia ones, they, or the new Lumias, they announced that on their announcement aren't. They're still ARM machines, but I don't know. We talked about that already. But in a way, Apple actually beat them to one interface to rule them all. And I don't mean one interface. I mean one operating system. iOS, essentially, is Mac OS X. The difference between iOS and Mac OS X is just the interface. The kernel is the same. A lot of the operating system is the same. This is actually why they were able to figure out how to jailbreak iOS so that you can do things. Like, for example, one of the things I've read about jailbreaks, jailbreak tricks, is the fact that now it's probably not 100% the same, but they're actually doing a jailbreak trick on iOS phones that adds the 3D touch stuff to a iPhone 6. Not 6S, 6. The 6 is, like, that's the one I have for work, and it does not have the 3D touch or whatever they're calling it. I think they call it Force Touch. All right. And so they were able to add that without the quote-unquote extra hardware. Now, it's not all the same, of course, but it generally is. And some of the other features that this hack also adds to is the live, what they call the live photos, where they basically have, really, it's the equivalent of an animated GIF. So, anywho, I'll go back to listening to your show when I get back. I gotta go for a walk. Car's not done or dead. Had some issues with my car. I'm probably gonna have to take it back to the dealer to get a recall looked at. Again, mine happens to have one of those extended ones on the cooling system. So GM's taking care of it, or should take care of it. I'll talk to them tomorrow morning as soon as I can. I'll see when I can get the car in for repair. Hopefully it'll be tomorrow, because we can't really live that long without this car functioning. Fortunately for my wife, the boy is not in school tomorrow. He has a day off school, so that's a good thing. So I'll listen to the rest of your show when you get back. But, you know, in a way, Apple beat Microsoft here. They have one operating system to rule them all, not one interface, but who knows? They're making Mac OS X more and more iOS-like anyway, so I think it eventually all will just be iOS, because that makes sense for them. Yeah, and by the way, too, just got support. I was actually listening to it with my one-ear headset, because I was charging my stereo one. You're talking about the Premiere Elements 2014, and I just thought I'd ping you. You've probably seen it, but the Creative Cloud, they actually have a cheaper subscription if all you want is Lightroom and Photoshop. That's $10 a month. Well worth it, as far as I'm concerned. And Lightroom is a
a pretty nifty program, especially if you're shooting raws. In fact, I think I'm going to clean off my memory card. It's in my DSLR right now. And I was shooting both a JPEG and a raw image at the same time, which it can do. I think I'm going to turn off the JPEG because I just drag them within to Lightroom and I make the adjustments there. And then if you want to go further than Lightroom can do, you can use Adobe Camera Raw within Photoshop and do more there. But for most of my edits, Lightroom is sufficient. It's only when I really need to get crazy or if I want to do something kind of cool, like I'm going to Circle Hill for the pumpkin show. And a few years ago, I might take one with this intent this year. But a few years ago, I actually took a picture of some of the pumpkins. And then I basically made the whole thing black and white. And then did just the pumpkins in orange, you know, in the orange that the pumpkins usually are. So that made a really cool image. So I may do that with that in mind this year. So just because now a lot of the personal things, unless I actually decide to put those into a video for YouTube, a lot of the personal things I'll do, I just do it just for the sake of posting on Facebook and documenting my family. May not make a video for some of that. So I'll just color correct them. May play around with one doing that black and white pumpkin orange thing. And then just post those to Facebook, you know. Of course, I could do a video too, but really there's no sense of me doing a video like that. All my family wants to do is look at the pictures on Facebook. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you, Joel. While you were talking there, I was thinking about what I'd said earlier. Let's say you have a phone, you know, like I've got this Note 4. It's 5.7-inch. Of course, that's what the Note 3 is and the Note 5 is. They're all 5.7-inch. But let's say that you had that, let's say it's a Windows phone, one of those Windows phones that Microsoft just announced does have a 5.7-inch, you know, it's a 5.7-inch widescreen, essentially. So, with a more or less a 16:9 aspect ratio. So, if let's say you had an Intel processor on there and you had enough RAM, let's say you had at least, well, let's make it easy. Let's say there's 4 gigabytes of RAM, and let's say that you have a 64 or a 128 gigabytes of storage, flash storage, so a flash drive basically. And that's not unreasonable. So let's say you have 128 gigabytes of internal storage and an Intel processor and a 4 gigabytes of RAM. Okay. And so I could take that theoretically and plug it into a CD, DVD drive. And load something like what I'm using right now, Adobe Edition 1.5. And theoretically, that all should work. If it's the Intel version of Windows running Intel software, you've basically got a computer that has enough screen resolution because, what would it be? 2048 by 1920? Is that the resolution? For the 16:9 is something along those lines. If it's a 1080p or it's 1920 by 1080 is what it is. 1920 by 1080, and that's pretty much 1080p. And so that would scale. It would be small on a 5.7-inch screen, but it would scale. And it should display perfectly. You might need a magnifying glass in order to read it. You know, of course, if you had more pixels, and it's better, obviously, or an even bigger, you know, let's say it was a 7-inch tablet, and then it's starting to get to the size where, but it would be a phone. Then it's starting to get to the size where it, you know, theoretically it could work better. So, or you get one of the, I don't know if you were around. You might have been a kid whenever this happened, but sometime it must have been back in the, it would have had to have been in the sometime in the 70s. I should look this up. But sometime in the late 70s, or maybe even the early 80s, there was a period of time where you'd go into a department store like Walmart, or and sometimes even, you know, like Montgomery Ward or Kmart or Sears. And you would see these, it was sort of like a lens thing that you would put in front of your television. And the idea, it was a sort of a frame, and it had this kind of a plastic lens that it held up in front of your television screen, that this frame held up in front of your television screen. And then the idea being that you were sitting back in your easy chair, and you were looking through this, basically it was a large magnifying large magnifying glass, and you got sort of an enlarged kind of a bigger screen experience. That was the idea, that instead of having a big screen TV, you know, of course, those weren't very, you know, maybe, I don't know, back in that, then I think probably the biggest screen that you could buy would be probably 23-inch diagonal, 4x3 aspect ratio television, tube television. You could place this lens, this big plastic lens, and kind of position it in front of the TV, and then you'd have your easy chair directly behind that. And if you got everything positioned properly, you would get sort of an enlarged, magnified, bigger screen experience. Of course, those things, they were around for a little while, and then they were gone. I don't think that idea ever caught on. But so you could possibly do something like that with a, if you had everything scaled down on your phone so that you had, you know, 1920 by 1080 worth of screen real estate, like, because that's the actual resolution on that MacBook Pro 17-inch that I have is 1920 by 1080. Let's say that I was running something like Adobe Edition 1.5, then that would all scale perfectly, except it would just be smaller on a smaller screen. So something like that could be possible. But I don't know about the magnifying idea, but it, theoretically, you could, if you got the screen large enough on a phone, maybe let's say it's a 6-inch phone or even a 7-inch phone with a 7-inch high resolution screen, then it would be possibly big enough where you could just take that single device and you were really going to travel light, and you could possibly take that single device and do everything with it. The way they, you know, and you mentioned, you know, they're making OS X more like iOS, and that it's, they've added all these different, gestures. Of course, you know, you can't, there's no touch screen on a OS X device. On the Mac, there's no touchscreen, so for whatever reason, they've decided that whenever Steve Jobs is around, that your arm would get too tired or something like that. So, but they've got these gestures on the touchpad, and you know, and they're trying to make it more like iOS, where you kind of slide things around, and then they've got this app store for OS X, and of course those are more, that's kind of turning OS X into a kind of a dumbed down computing experience. Excuse me, rather than having larger applications that are more sophisticated. It seems like it, especially the App Store idea, and this is even true on the Windows App Store, it's kind of a dumbed-down experience, and which is fine. There's a place for apps. I'm not saying there's not a place for apps. Excuse me. I got a frog in my throat all of a sudden. There is a place for apps, but then you need also productivity software. And apps, I'm sorry, but apps are not productivity software. You're not going to do real-world work. You're not going to be able to do much real-world work, if any at all, with an app. Where apps really end up excelling is really specialty purpose, like you have your banking app. And then the biggest area, I think, where apps excel is in media consumption. You got a Netflix app, and you got a Hulu Plus app, and you got an Amazon Video app, and you got all, you know, apps like that, specialty purpose apps, special purpose apps, Facebook app, great, works good. But it's not the same as genuine, sophisticated productivity software. You know, the app edit, you know, editing a video in an app is, you can do it. I've done it on both Android and iOS, and it's kind of a dumbed down experience. Same way with editing audio via an app. It's kind of a dumbed down experience. And so there's a place for both, but and I see where, you know, Apple is trying to maintain, really, I guess, a distance between the two. And then, I don't know, I think at some point, and who knows what the future holds, but I do think there's a lot of people, and maybe not everybody, but I do think there's a nice segment of the market, as Microsoft has discovered, that really want to turn their tablet into a computer. They really want to do more than just consume media on it. The tablet is a great form factor, and I think that's where Microsoft is meeting a bunch of success with the starting with the Surface Pro 3, because they really got it right. They got an Intel processor in there, and you can run regular software on there, and I really believe they've improved. They've got Windows right. They've nailed the touch interface. Where you still have the desk, you know, there's enough, you can run it as a desktop operating system only, but if you've got touch on the screen, then you got really everything you want. So I really think they've nailed that part of it. But of course the Apple people, I listen, as I've mentioned before, I listen to a bunch of Apple-centric podcasts, and in part, I don't know why, I find, you know, it's kind of entertaining, but I do find that it can be fascinating hearing these people, and a lot of them, obviously, if they're podcasting about Apple, if they're doing their Apple podcasts, their Apple-centric podcasts, it's fascinating listening to them kind of rationalize. They'll complain about this and complain about that, and then turn right around, and they have to have the newest and whatever it is, and then they'll whatever Apple says, they'll end up rationalizing why. Oh well, that really is the case. Apple knows best. Let's give Apple all of our money. It's Apple is kind of a religion for a lot of people. Apple and their Apple devices, it really is a kind of a religious cult, and maybe it's not for everybody. Everybody that has an Apple product isn't necessarily a member of the Apple cult. As far as the religious part of it, they may not be participating in that, but there are plenty of them that do. And this world is full of religious cults. It's not limited to the Apple religious cult. There's a global warming religious cult, or climate, if you want to call it a climate change religious cult. And then you have the secular humanists religious cult. There's lots of religious cults around, and they all, it's interesting, because if you really know what to look at and you're able to recognize the religious cult pattern, then you can begin to see it everywhere. It really is everywhere. And of course, the people that are usually, sometimes people that are participating in a cult will kind of know it, and you hear the Apple people, some of them will kind of laugh about it, and then of course they're engaged in it. But they'll kind of laugh, you know, make a little joke about it being a cult, but then there's a lot of them that deny it. And certainly there's plenty of people in the secular humanist cult, the religious cult, that's because they've made that into a kind of a fake religion. And Islam, I'm going to say something maybe controversial. Islam is a religious cult, and a lot of Christianity is a religious cult. And what turns something into a religious cult is not necessarily with a religion. It's you have a religion like Christianity or even Judaism or Islam. It's not the religious thing itself or the writings themselves, but it's the people that end up inhabiting the religion, you know, the people that are taking part in it. And if you get too many of those people and I think you always have some that will do it, they'll end up misusing whatever it is. And you can turn a toothpick, you could take a ritual and make an elaborate ritual out of toothpicks and turn it into your own little religious cult. And there are people that probably have. I guarantee you there are. But because people have turned anything and everything into religious cults. Some of them are, with the Apple one, it's just been the most successful ever, because Steve Jobs was able to recognize the need in people for they're guilty and they sort of need to be validated, and they're manipulatable. You can kind of manipulate them, suggest to them, and sort of make them feel better about themselves. And if you can do that on a consistent basis, then people will give you all of their money. How do you think Apple ended up with $200 billion in the bank? You can get them to do all kinds of different behavior that's not necessarily in their best interest. In fact, you can get people to do violent behavior. You look at the early history of Christianity, you know, where they'd burn people at the stake if they dared to, they express some sort of heresy. That type of thing's going on today. Look at the secular humanists. Look at the global warming people. Why you're a climate denier. You're a denier. We're going to ostracize you if you're a scientist. We're going to cut your we're going to cut your funding off. I mean, you can't be a scientist. You know, so if you're going to be a scientist, and of course that's all about government grants today. If you're going to get your government grant, if you want that government grant assured and to be able to play our game, then you have to use your science to give us validation. And that's a very real problem today with science. That's why I and a lot of other people tend to just want to disbelieve it, because a lot of it is fake. A lot of it, people say, just they'll say anything in order to keep the money flowing. They don't want to lose their jobs, don't want to lose their grants, don't want to lose their professorships at the, you know, these universities and what have you. So it's a big problem. So anyway, that's enough. I guess I need to be cutting this off and get headed to bed. Hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.